The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, what's up, everyone? It is 10:55 p.m. Not even 30 seconds ago, WWE Extreme Rules went off the air. But I am not alone. I am joined along with tonight.
Kevin Castle just finished doing a little dance.
Yeah, you know, Brock Lesnar cashing in the briefcase. Unfortunately, I think he should have cashed in with the other champion, but we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Okay.
I saw a lot of mixed views online as far as the pay-per-view. The pay-per-view is not even off the air 5 minutes. What is your immediate reaction as far as Extreme Rules tonight?
Not bad. I mean, I don't know. You know, we'll break it down. But I wasn't. It wasn't the best. It wasn't the worst. It was decent. It was decent. And quite honestly, Lashley and Strowman surprised me again. I'm going to put that in the top upper echelons of this card. I can't believe I'm saying it. Those two, I enjoyed that the most. With Taker and Roman the second, and then we can go from there. But overall, not bad. I'm not disappointed. I'm happy to see Brock get the belt back. It needed to be done. But I agree with you. It probably should have been Kofi to take the pin. But maybe there's a rhyme to reason for all this.
Well, yeah, the rhyme to reason is they want SmackDown to have that feel-good moment that all members of New Day have gold.
that's probably it.
You know what? Let them enjoy it now, because I will quit the shows. I will quit the shows if WWE, when they move to the new TV deal, that New Day own the gold at that time. They will not have the gold at that time. Let them have it now. But I think one to two more pay-per-views, and that's done. I mean, it's overstayed its welcome, and it's nothing against Kofi, but this is mostly on WWE, because I brought this up on Breakfast Soup with Mish last week, that how, especially with Little Man versus Huge Man, Extreme Rules, the easiest fucking excuse to have an Extreme Rules match with Kofi and Samoa Joe to fucking go balls out, and not to the extent of Jeff Hardy, Undertaker, the ladder match from Raw many years ago. But my God, I mean, it seems like the only way they could have Kofi overcome the odds is, you know, it's, I don't know, man. It just feels like, you know, a spot. There's so much that could have been done in that match. And it just feels like WWE doesn't put that much effort into it. Extreme fucking rules. I mean, think about it. Samoa Joe is choking him out, man. And Kofi's giving him the middle finger, man. And Samoa Joe is threatening he's going to do this and do that to this, man. And Kofi is doing this snap, man. And he's knocking him out, man. And they don't have an Extreme Rules match.
No.
You know, I mean, this pay-per-view, for the most part, I will say this, from beginning to end, probably my favorite WWE pay-per-view this year.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. I mean, look, no pay-per-view is going to be perfect. I mean, I think even AEW fans will vouch for that, you know, from what they've seen. I mean, not everything is perfect. I don't know if I've ever watched a pay-per-view from bell to bell and say, oh, it was a 10.
Yeah.
There's always going to be something. But you see the effort that is being put in, and you know that they don't like, you know, this AEW, you know, momentum that is going on. And you got Kofi, who is historic with his championship reign, and this is the best you could come up with? At Extreme Rules, the easiest pay-per-view not to have rules, and they have rules.
Yeah. Doesn't make sense. I know Bray Wyatt, which I was very surprised. I thought for sure we would see Bray.
Well,
maybe tomorrow.
I have a feeling, you know, it's got to be this week or next week. I mean, you took him off of TV, and we actually called that the vignettes were pretty much done, and it was going to be the transition to, you know, the next level. Why they killed the momentum. I mean, I don't give a fuck you got a puppet backstage. You know what I mean? It's like, oh my God, a puppet is backstage. That motherfucker should have been out on TV the following week, or they should have kept the skits going, or do a little tease or some special effect or something. And to just totally forget about it for a month, it's like, my God. I think I compared this once before to fucking, you know, having sex. You got foreplay, you know, you're having fun, you're getting excited, this and that. And it's like they decide, you know, right before they're about to have intercourse, they decide, you know what, they're going to go outside and walk the dog. I mean, come on. This gap between the fucking weeks is just horrendous. But we'll get into the card match by match. You know, the pre-show, we had Finn Balor versus Nakamura. And I should also bring up the fact that WWE Extreme Rules took place in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania at the Wells Fargo Center. I thought the crowd overall was very lively tonight. A lot of this is awesome chance at matches you probably didn't expect it to get.
Yeah, it was not bad. The crowd was kind of into it, then taken out of it a little bit, then back into it. It was kind of hot and cold. But again, some of the matches that I was prepared to kind of just zonk out of and zone out of kept my interest, like Lashley and Braun Strowman.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was some other stuff. And, you know, I thought Bayley was going to lose. She didn't. I didn't do the predictions tonight with our friend there. I was the only one who I missed out. I missed the boat on that one. But I think I would have got a lot of them wrong, to be honest with you.
Well, the pre-show, we had Nakamura versus Finn Balor.
Yeah.
You know, why this was on the pre-show, I don't...
Yeah, what was that all about?
I don't get... I mean, just save it for SmackDown. I mean, the match was good, and Nakamura, two matches in a row, has really shined. And I think it's, you know, it's definitely coincidence that the two matches that he really shined are against an opponent that he excelled with in Japan. That style. I mean, you look at the WWE roster top and down. Remember when he had his match, I think it was against Ziggler, when he first was coming in, and it just, these matches were falling flat. And unfortunately, Nakamura's style doesn't necessarily mesh with a lot of WWE wrestlers' styles. And it seemed like WWE was trying to domesticate Nakamura to be a little bit more laxed, you know, prolong his career, adapt to the WWE style, you know, not so much with what he was doing in Japan, even though he had the gyrations and the other shit. And it seemed like it fell flat. And we're finally getting to see a little bit more of what Nakamura is known for. But again, it's only with Finn Balor. But I like the match. Should have went much longer. Nakamura getting not only the win and the belt, but a significant win. I mean, he dominated this match, and this is two matches in a row that he dominated Finn Balor.
So it's a repush for Nakamura, and you think Balor goes to be with his club member? They somehow transfer Balor over so he can get part of this new crew now with AJ and the Good Brothers?
Yeah, it's very possible. I mean, it seems like that's the only way to really get this momentum back for Finn Balor. The thing is that Finn Balor is on SmackDown, and AJ Styles and the club are on Raw. So there's got to be, you know, this wild card, and I really got into this on Breakfast Soup. This wild card needs to end with Bischoff and Heyman now going balls out as far as, you know, to whatever authority that they have. You know, again, when Vince has the final say, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that they're going to be able to do a lot of the things that we want them to do.
Yeah.
But one thing is for certain, somebody who Bischoff feels, I don't think she get a push, but Paul Heyman would be like, give him the belt. You know, definitely. You know, so you can't have a guy go wild card. I'm going to use Roman Reigns for a bad example. You don't want to have Roman Reigns being utilized one way on Raw and a different way on SmackDown. And why would Paul Heyman want his guys to show up on SmackDown unless it was a storyline for Survivor Series?
That's true. I think, and what you're saying with the wild card, I think that needs to end too. But do you think that they could have Heyman and Bischoff do one of those mock trades?
Well, they like might.
They trade talent, yeah.
You know, a lot of people are saying that we need a draft. We need to do a new draft.
Yeah, like a draft. Yeah, they both come out and they both with their personalities and they go to the podium and they, I want this guy, I want this guy. I think that would generate a lot of excitement.
Sure. And I also feel the trades are absolutely necessary. Because quite honestly, you know, if they want to incorporate Finn Balor with the club, all they really have to do, I mean, if you remember that time, remember when Andrade was moved to SmackDown and then he showed up on Raw or vice versa and it was like no explanation given and he got unfinished business. The fuck is that?
And then you found out that Charlotte told the power play to get him transferred.
Yeah, and I think they were just short-staffed that weekend because I think you had some wrestlers that couldn't make the show. But I think the easiest thing to do is you could just have Finn Balor show up on Raw, and you could have one of the announcers say that Eric Bischoff and Paul Heyman made a trade and blah, 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 blah for blah, blah, blah. The only thing is that we need to have acknowledged on television that Bischoff and Heyman are now, again, you know, I apologize for non-patrons. Trust me, I don't do this to tease. I swear I don't. But we get into conversations on the patron shows because it's not only that we have a lot more time to spend on those shows, but, you know, our patrons dictate the topics. And one of the topics that I brought up, because a few people were asking questions about our views on Heyman and Bischoff, is, you know, this cute little play on words that WWE has done. And this is something that I haven't seen anybody bring up. And I talked about this the day after the announcement. You know, it's not executive producer. It's executive director.
Right.
Now, you do some Google searches in the entertainment world and you show me where executive director is like a fucking job description. You know what I mean? It's like it's not a normal term that you would use. And it's like, all right, they're being a little bit cute with the words. But whether they're cute with the words or not, they still have not acknowledged on camera yet that Bischoff and Heyman are running the show. So if right. we don't have it acknowledged on camera, it's going to look kind of stupid that there's a trade. It's like, oh, wait a minute. What, Bischoff and they have to do something.
Yeah, you're right.
So, but so Balor gets dominated, and you know, the rest is history. We had another dark match. I'm just trying to think right now. What was the other dark match? The pre-show match?
Tony Nese and Drew.
Yes, Gulak retains the Cruiserweight Championship. Not as good as their last match, but they put in a great effort. I mean, Gulak now is up 2-1 as far as Nese goes. I'm just happy that Gulak has that title.
And he's from Philly, and he was coming off the Evolve show with a very good match with Riddle last night on Evolve, which I got to see. And he put in two good performances tonight. Had more time to play with Riddle at Evolve, obviously, than tonight. But two good matches in raising the profile for Gulak, who both me and you are pretty high on.
Yeah. Pay-per-view opens up with Undertaker and Roman Reigns getting the win on Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre. A little bit of interference from Elias.
Yeah.
I thought that we were going to see, you know, Stone Cold Owens come out and maybe hit Shane with a stunner, especially when Elias interfered. You figure, even up the odds, 3-on-3. But Undertaker, you know, look, I've been saying it since his interaction, you know, around WrestleMania time when he showed up on Raw with Elias. You know, if you keep him grounded, he looks great. You go from east to west, Undertaker is fine. When you go from north to south is where you run into some problems. And you could see it. I mean, Undertaker tonight, definitely his best performance in recent memory.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, shades above what we last saw him on a few weeks ago with Goldberg, which I'm sure he wants everybody to forget about. Tonight, yeah, he looked good. I mean, again, he looks his age, but he put in a good performance tonight. Him and Reigns worked well together. The crowd was into it, I think. There's some smattering of boos for Reigns, but nothing of significance. I think the cheers and the excitement offset any kind of Reigns blowback that there was, and it was very little. And, you know, Shane... they all put in a pretty good match. I don't think anybody was the star of the match. I didn't see any breakout performances, in my opinion.
I don't think anybody would expect it in that match. That was more of like a novelty match. And you know what? They did what not only us, but a lot of people have been saying. You don't need The Undertaker to either close out or almost close out an event. Saudi Arabia, yeah. It's different because that is the request. That is what they want. That is what they got. But there's nothing wrong with having The Undertaker, you know, come out the opening match. I saw some goofs online today saying, "Ah, Undertaker curtain jerker. I mean, look at how bad he's fought." What the fuck, man? Don't you want? I mean, I don't care where the match placement is. As long as the matches are good, that's my number one concern.
Exactly. And doesn't anybody remember at WrestleMania when Edge opened up against Alberto Del Rio and tore the house down? I mean, why is the opening match a curtain jerk match?
Yeah.
That's not true. It's opening match sometimes going on first is actually a pretty good thing. You get the crowd hot. Mm-hmm. And the crowd was hot. The crowd was into it. Well, there was no silence, which there was during a lot of other matches tonight.
Yeah. I was very surprised with the number of matches tonight that they would spend almost 40 minutes on Undertaker, Reigns, McMahon, and McIntyre. I mean, the match itself went about 17, 18 minutes, but with the Undertaker entrance, you know, you got a couple extra minutes to it. It was almost 40 minutes when you figure everything out that went down. I mean, right. But I liked it. Undertaker at the very end, it seemed like when he was going to put Shane in the tombstone that there was a little bit uneasiness. If you look at that split second, and anybody did get him in the tombstone and got it. But once again, you know, what I said for the night of the Saudi Arabia event, Undertaker's legs, as great as he must feel, as great as he thinks he feels, unfortunately, the legs are absolutely critical in a lot of moves, especially Undertaker moves. Badass Big Evil, you know, it's more of a ground game. But, you know, when he climbs the rope, you know, he's got to hold on to the person's arm for leverage. And, you know, I'm not trying to be critical of Taker today. I thought he was great. But you watch closely when Taker jumped off the top rope and did that punch onto Shane's shoulder. It looked ridiculous. I mean, it looks like there's no strength behind it, and you could see that he's holding on to Shane for leverage. You know, it's and the end when he went for the tombstone. My whole point of what I'm saying is it all comes back to the legs.
Yeah,
it's the push off, and when you do high risk moves like that, the push off is critical. He doesn't have that. That spring in his legs anymore. And, you know, they got away with it tonight. But again, you look at that tombstone at the very end, you had that little second or two that there was a little uneasiness when he first tried to pick him up. And it's like, okay, this is exactly what we're talking about. East to west, Undertaker is great. North to south, they got to be very careful.
Yeah, I mean, he's an older guy, and obviously he used to be a basketball player, so he's probably got some knee and leg problems anyway, and just balance problems. I mean, he's 54 years old. Again, you know, but a much better effort than presentation than he had with Goldberg. So that's really what they wanted to do, was erase that, I think.
Yeah. Next, we had an advertisement that the Raw reunion is actually going to be going down July 22nd. And I need to remind everyone that, you know, we're now approaching the anniversary of I don't know if you want to call it the Women's Revolution, but Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch, and Charlotte appearing on Raw. I don't know if it's exactly the 22nd, but it is that week of their anniversary. I'm not saying that that's why they're doing Raw reunion and stuff like that, but if there was any time to bring Sasha Banks back, it's the anniversary of them appearing possibly on the main roster. But Raw reunion, you know, they're advertising Flair and Austin. They're saying the biggest reunion in company history. So who knows? Who knows going to show up that we haven't seen in a very long time?
Yeah, who really, DT, when you think about it, anybody off the top of your head comes to mind of some surprise?
No, because, you know, we've seen NWO, we've seen Flair, we've seen Austin, Hogan. You know, hopefully they don't ignore Goldberg going forward. I mean, it's... You know, you're going to have the segments in the back with, you know, probably Ron Simmons going by doing the damn. And you'll, you know, maybe he'll do a skit with Shelton Benjamin, because Shelton Benjamin's doing that thing now, you know, with his.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
But, hey, you know what? I'd rather be surprised.
Yeah, me too. I agree.
Next, Revival retain the tag titles against the Usos. I thought it was a little sloppy match.
I didn't like it. I didn't care for it.
Yeah, it seemed a little bit off. I was very surprised that it went almost 13 minutes. It felt like it was a lot shorter than that. But, you know, it was what it was. I think any match that was going to follow The Undertaker and Reigns and McIntyre and Shane was going to have a tough time keeping that energy from the crowd. So... You know, Revival retain the belts, you know, blob match.
Yeah, I was kind of taken out of it. I was kind of, that's when I was online, you know, playing around with the, you know, people on Discord and Patreon. I was on there most of the night, but that was a match where I was kind of just, you know, I was watching it, but I wasn't paying as close attention to it as I wanted to.
Tommy the Rock could very well appear. They're going to be in Florida. So, I mean, I'm not saying that
Rock. The Rock, that would be great, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he still lives in Florida. I mean, if I remember correctly, isn't he in California now? But you know what? Florida?
He's bi-coastal, dude.
Yeah, so it's very possible. Very possible.
Yeah, and plus, he's me promoting that movie that's coming up with Reigns.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll be it. Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe we'll see, like, wouldn't be surprised if we see a red carpet pre-recorded segment tomorrow with Reigns and The Rock on Raw, you know, talking about the movie and stuff like that. So we'll probably see The Rock, but I have a feeling we'll probably have a better chance seeing him tomorrow night than the following Monday. Yep. Next match, Aleister Black returns. You know, I got to tell you, him versus Cesaro, when the match first started, it seemed like the crowd was not all that into it. And then about 2-3 minutes in, it really started to kick into gear. And we got, if I remember correctly, the first This Is Awesome chant of the night. I thought Aleister Black and Cesaro tore it up. Arguably my favorite match of the night.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'll put that in my top three. Yeah, it was good. It was good to see Black back. Cesaro's a great opponent for anybody. Cesaro is one of those guys that you shake your head because he should be bigger than what he is. He's a good go-to guy. I don't think he's on the Ziggler, let's just drop him out constantly level, because he does get some big wins here and there. I just think they just don't know what to do with Cesaro, but I'm okay with Black beating him. It legitimizes Black more as a singles guy, because, you know, people have to get that whole tag team of Ricochet out of their minds, because that's what he mostly did when he was on. He had very few singles matches.
When you have vignettes for 2 months, you know what I mean?
I know, but vignettes like that, DT, but vignettes like Bray Wyatt kept your interest. Those vignettes that Aleister Black did, it was someone knock on my door. It was becoming...
I was joking on Breakfast Soup that Aleister Black being in a dark room saying, "I'm waiting... Where is everybody?" That's like me challenging someone to a fight and say, "Meet me at the fucking coffee shop." And then instead I go to the fucking gymnasium in the school and I'm just standing there and I'm like, "Where the fuck is everybody?" Week after week, "Where the fuck is everybody?" But meanwhile, I told everybody to go to the fucking coffee shop. I mean, I didn't like the vignettes at all. I think maybe one person in the predictions contest predicted Cesaro to win. I think after having 2 months worth of vignettes, Aleister Black, there was no way but for either him to win or him to get disqualified. I don't think there was any chance that Cesaro could have pulled that off. But I tell you that the sad thing about it is I don't know if they're going to do this 50-50 booking with Aleister Black. After building him that much, I would love to see like a best of seven series with Aleister Black and Cesaro, maybe leading into SummerSlam. The only problem is I don't know if WWE wants Aleister Black to be trading victories with Cesaro this early on after all those vignettes.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is a one and done or they're going to continue this because Cesaro is not just like a job guy that can continue this feud. I mean, Lord knows how many shots did Lacey get at freaking, you know, Becky and Baron Corbin with Seth, and there was a title on the line. So why can't this feud continue, DT? There's nothing really on the line. If they have nothing better to do, Cesaro can go, give me another shot. You got lucky last night. And they can continue this week.
After the performance they put tonight and the crowd reaction to it, WWE will, without a doubt, have Aleister Black and Cesaro again. I don't know if they will have them trade victories. I would love it. I don't think it would hurt the stock of Aleister Black in any way. But, you know, WWE's thinking is a lot different than a lot of us out there. But, you know, match went about 10 minutes. I don't think anybody would have a problem if it went another 5 minutes or so. It was a great match. They really gel great together, and this might be the first time they ever faced off.
Yeah, I don't believe they've ever faced each other before, and it's a good matchup. I mean, Cesaro's got some height on him, but otherwise they match up pretty well.
Chat room, did the bar face Ricochet and Aleister Black when they were still a tag team? Does anybody remember that? I don't sort of remember it. But, you know, I think Cesaro and Aleister Black, it reminds me a little bit of Andrade and Rey Mysterio. And Rey Mysterio, like, we knew they would have a decent match. I don't think anybody thought that they would click as great as they did. But, unfortunately, WWE didn't let that feud go all that long. So,
yeah.
Next, we have R-Truth backstage putting up wanted signs for Drake Maverick. He bumps into Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. Alexa Bliss gives Nikki an Alexa t-shirt. Street Profits there once again. I don't know, man. I mean, the Street Profits, very talented, doing great in NXT. WWE right now is really focusing on their persona. And I think they're clicking so far. I think on the main roster with their little vignettes backstage, it's not overkill, and I think the crowd is actually warming up to it.
Yeah, I like them. I mean, I like, obviously, everything focuses on one particular guy. Was it Montel Ford? He's pretty much the guy, but the other dude is pretty good, too. I just didn't, you know, a lot of people comparing him to Crime Time. I don't think that's really fair, but, I mean, there's a little bit of the same with the back and forth and the way they kind of you know, play off each other, and not just because they're both African-American teams, but because of the way they play off each other, the backstage stuff. I mean, so I could see the comparisons, but if they're not going to wrestle, that's the only thing I don't understand is DT, is they're just going to, you know, cause mischief backstage.
I think they'll have a match very soon. I think right now they're just trying to get the crowd familiar with them because, you know, unfortunately, I say this all the time, the viewership for NXT is a lot smaller than what people think. And there's a lot of people online that, you know, lie through their teeth and say they watch NXT religiously, and then they act like they never saw them perform before. I mean, it's they did it with Lars, they're doing it with them. It's ridiculous. But thank you, Shezzy, Mike, and everybody else. The bar did share the ring with Aleister Black and Ricochet when the Usos defended the SmackDown tag titles in a fatal four-way back in March.
Right. That's right. So yeah
that was actually WrestleMania.
That's right.
That was the four-way WrestleMania. I mean, the match, again, you look back at WrestleMania with the exception of the women's match, you know, you're left with 5 years from now, how many matches are you going to actually remember as far as the matches or because of the advertisement? I completely forgot about that match.
Yeah, but if from solo singles matches, I don't believe they've
ever think they've ever faced off WWE singles. I mean, Aleister Black didn't have many singles in WWE to begin with, but I hope they have that feud. So next we have Bayley retaining the SmackDown Women's title over Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross.
See, I would have thought Bayley was going to lose it, so I would have called that match wrong. You know, Nikki, I think this is, I said this when chatting with the Discord folks for Patreon, that I think this is as good as it's ever going to get for Nikki. And I meant that not even sarcastically. I think that if you probably ask Nikki, she's satisfied with this. She's with one of the top girls. She might be playing second banana, but she's getting a lot of TV time. She's in a feature match on the pay-per-view. This is as good as it gets for Nikki. I don't see her being any better than this.
Well, you know, I honestly thought WWE would have considered putting the belt on Alexa Bliss. And then Nikki Cross believing that they would be co-holders of the tag titles, and then Alexa Bliss swerves Nikki Cross and says she's the only champion. It could only be one, and this, this, and that. And it hurts Nikki Cross, and they have the split, and then maybe that leads them into like a little feud, possibly into SummerSlam. I mean, that could, the feud could still happen.
Yeah, they could still do that, but they'd have to rush it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me want... See, one thing that I was battling with in this match with the predictions last week was Alexa and Nikki Cross are Raw wrestlers. Bayley is SmackDown. And if Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross would have won, you would have had both women's champions on Raw, and it didn't feel like Becky was going to be losing that title tonight against Corbin and Lacey Evans, which we'll get into a little later. So if Bayley loses the belts to Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, then that means there's got to be a turnover with one of those women's belts very quickly. Yeah. And they didn't know if they were actually going to do that. But they had basically Bayley, while Alexa Bliss was knocked outside the ring, she hits the elbow drop from the top rope onto Nikki Cross for the 1-2-3. Obviously, Alexa Bliss will take it out on Nikki tomorrow night because Nikki's the one that actually lost the match. And we'll see where it goes with Bayley. We'll see if Sasha Banks returns. We'll see what the fuck is going on with Charlotte. I mean, how?
I was going to say that. I'm like, we're missing like a top girl here. It's like Charlotte is missing. Where is she?
Yeah.
Is there any word on her? There's no word in wrestling news or anything about Charlotte. What is her MIA thing? What is that?
I did just. They don't have. They
anything
can't,
for her?
They,
there's nothing wrong with Rick. There's nothing going on in the family. Again, is she just off TV?
She may have had a minor injury, but right now, I mean, I just can't figure out why. Ben Andrade's mother died. Yeah, it's sad. You know, condolences to his family. But that's not
weeks ago, guys.
That's not the reason why Charlotte's been off TV.
Yeah, you don't get 3 weeks off.
Yeah,
of TV.
It might have been for one episode, but not storylines, feuds, title shots. No. You know, for weeks and weeks and weeks. Charlotte's got to be thrown back into the mix. If they are going to announce Bischoff and Heyman publicly as GMs, that's another one where they probably should consider moving Charlotte over to Raw. The problem is I don't think anybody really wants to see Becky versus Charlotte once again. It just would feel like the Usos in the New Day. You know, like it's been too many matches, too short a time. I mean, they need to go to separate ways. The problem is, you know, this is what happens when you focus on so few women for too long. It's like, who's Charlotte going to feud with? Natty? Yeah. That's Carmella? Maybe Alexa Bliss? I don't see it.
I don't see it either. I mean, the Sasha thing, and people, Sasha's got to come back and be a heel, challenge Becky. I agree. That's the money. That's definitely the marquee thing. You would think go after Bayley, you know, jealousy or whatever. But I think Sasha should come back, and who knows, maybe again this week that's a surprise and challenges Becky, because Lacey Evans is done with Becky. It's got to be done, right, DT? Even though she didn't eat the pin tonight, Lacey walked away.
That was,
if anything,
that was a stipulation.
Right. She abandoned Corbin, but they won't get any more. You know, but they can get around that. I mean, we've seen that happen before.
But as of right now,
she should be done with her in general anyway. The crowd isn't feeling this. I was kind of cringing tonight from the non-reaction between the two in the ring. I don't blame it all on Lacey. It's just people are not interested.
Yeah. Next, we had Braun Strowman versus Lashley in the last man standing match. I thought it was very slow at times, but it was very physical. Throwing each other around, battling into the concourse area. Lashley taking a suplex into like the merchandise, on the wall. I thought it was great from top to bottom. I mean, right towards the end, we had Strowman pick up Lashley, and I just threw him through, obviously a gimmicked area, yeah. But he just, they just disappeared. And, you knew that Lashley needed to get the win, especially after teasing all of these crazy injuries that he had and stuff like that. I really appreciated, I know it's 18 years since it's out of business. I know it's not around anymore, but I really enjoyed the fact that we got one chant for ECW tonight. Because back in the day, whenever something hardcore was on WWE TV, they would chant ECW. You don't get that chant anymore, and yes, it is an outdated chant. But the fact that they chanted for that one particular spot, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool, and the crowd. I was thinking this match is going to suck, but then it started. And they gave Lashley got most of the offense. Him, he really took it to Braun. Where I was even starting to think Braun was kind of looking weak in this match. Lashley was really getting the best of him. Then they took it outside into the concession area and stuff like that. It was good. The last two times these guys met, it was interesting. Of course, the crashing into the electrical system and stuff, and now closing it out with this. And once again, DT, is this the end of this feud, or does this continue because they thought, well, these guys work pretty good together. Let's continue this.
I know we're probably not going to see it, but I'd like to see a little bit of mutual respect between the two for, beating the fuck out of each other for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Turn Lashley face? Or?
No, I don't say turn him. I'm not necessarily saying turn him face, but, they did fucking strong strength competitions and tug of wars, and they went through the fucking back, and, it got exploded. I think it's at the point now where, all right, feud done. I think Strowman, they need to start putting Strowman for a heavyweight title shot. I'm not saying.
You think put him, start elevating him again?
I think Heyman will do a great job with Strowman. I don't know if Strowman versus Lesnar is the way to go right now, because we've seen that. But, come to think of it, though, we've seen Lesnar and Seth before. I played it on a history show like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Played a promo that Paul Heyman cut on Seth Rollins with Brock Lesnar in the ring. It was like 6 years ago. And if you take the authority reference out of that promo and played it live on Monday, I think people would actually believe that it was said this week and not 6 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it was.
That's true.
So I think Strowman needs to start going for some gold. I think it's about time. I really do. Next, we had the SmackDown tag titles, Daniel Bryan and Rowan, who were the champs. They lose the belts to Big E and Xavier Woods.
I just was not feeling this match. I'm a little sick of the New Day. I love Daniel Bryan. I don't like Rowan, not personally. I think Rowan, stepped in shit and struck gold when he got to team up with Daniel Bryan, a high profile, probably one of the best heels in the company, best stars in the game, even though he's lost his luster being a heel. Of course, the yes things, the merch doesn't sell anymore because he's a bad guy, but still getting to be and sit under that learning tree, even though, Rowan's been in the game a while, he must thank his lucky stars every day. He's with Bryan. Now they lost the belts. I don't know what happens now, but I'm tired of New Day, DT. I'm tired of some of these guys. It just seems to go back and forth, and I'm just, I would have liked Heavy Machinery to got it. to get it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, maybe give them the pop. Otis is over. Every time he went in the ring, people chanted. He's got it. I think Tucker's going to lag behind him. Not exactly Sean to Marty Jannetty, but he's the Otis is the personality. So I think Tucker's got up his game a little bit. He's good in the ring. I know my brother likes him a lot, but Tucker shows me nothing other than he's Otis's partner. But you think it's just too early to give Heavy Machinery the belts?
Yeah, I think right now you basically, you know, take your time with them. There's no rush. I mean, it doesn't feel like AOP or the Viking Warriors, whatever the fuck they are, the Viking Raiders. Yeah. It doesn't feel like, it feels like Heavy Machinery have momentum. AOP, you know, they never felt like there was any momentum. Viking Raiders, neither. Even Sanity, for that brief time, didn't feel like there was any momentum. Heavy Machinery, though, it feels like there's momentum. I don't think there's any rush to it. It just makes me wonder if New Day are just going to be transitional tag champs. I don't know if they'll have the belts going into SummerSlam. They might. But, yeah, I think this whole thing now, you could see it a mile away. You know, they could advertise, you know, big, you know, New Day's celebration, gold celebration on SmackDown. Somebody has to interfere. There's got to be a major swerve. There's got to be something going down.
Unless they turn Big E, you know, bad guy, which they probably will down the road. But when they're selling merch and such high profile and the impending deal coming up just in a few months, it'll be here before we know it. Fall will be here in 3 short months. I think you might be right, DT. Keep New Day together as a focal point and fun for the kids, and they have titles and the pancake. Well, you know, to break them up now is probably just too nervous for the WWE. They have so few baby faces that are truly over that sell merchandise.
Well, I don't know who's going to be on the horizon as far as Kofi, as far as defending that title. I almost feel like now you got to do like a 3-way or a 4-way or something, because
for him to lose, you mean like he'd have to?
I don't know.
One-on-one.
I don't know to lose, because I don't know. First of all, I don't even know if they're going to do like a 3-4-way, 5-way. And if they do, I need to know who the participants are in the match first to think like, okay, yeah, I could see this person get it. Now it seems like Kevin Owens may be feuding with Shane McMahon next. I don't know if it's going to turn into Drew McIntyre. Who knows? But right now, Kofi, I mean, they're going to do the celebration on SmackDown. Let's see who interferes. Let's see who gets involved. And, you know, we go from there. So next, we had Ricochet losing the United States Championship to AJ Styles. Club at ringside, club getting involved a little bit. WWE had this little network special on Ricochet. I watched most of it. It really shows you how likable Ricochet is. Dirty Sanchez or not. I mean, Ricochet is a guy you root for. You could see that he's got something, and WWE definitely sees a bright future for this guy.
But yeah, I saw the special too.
But when they finished the special, I mean, the way it ended, I mean, what was your feeling going forward with the way the special ended?
I watched most of the special. I actually started that not off as I was. Why I watched so much wrestling this weekend. Boy, Ricochet has a type. Does Casey look like a littler version of Tessa Blanchard? They both have the same kind of jawline. It's really strange. He likes a type, doesn't he? But you're right. He is. What's his real name? Trevor?
I think so.
Yeah, he's Trevor because she called him that. And I was like, he is a wrestling guy. Like, he is like one of those guys, like a Daniel Bryan. Genuinely good guy who you can count on, who loves wrestling, who is all about wrestling, and he could be a good company guy. And I, you know, sometimes I don't believe all the time. I know what you say, DT, some of these dirt sheets when they put these things. But I do believe one of the things that one of the dirt sheets said, that Vince McMahon thinks he's good for the teenagers or the young crowd. I totally believe that.
But
I think Ricochet is meant for the young crowd.
But the
I don't
way
know if he's meant for guys our age to be a big fan of him, though.
Right. But the way they ended the whole special, I mean, where did you feel this was going to go next?
I don't even remember how the special ended. I watched it up until when Casey made the sign for him, welcome home, champ.
Well,
and I started falling asleep.
It just felt like momentum. You know what I mean? I mean, look,
In other words, why did he lose the title tonight? And they just showed that special?
Yeah, I mean, it felt like when it ended, like, okay, it's going to pick up at Extreme Rules where this special left off. And right. He was going to, you know, retain the title, go on some big-time momentum. The only saving grace on this is I think maybe that feud will exchange some victories. Ricochet versus AJ Styles, they need to, you know, exchange titles unless they decide they want to move Ricochet into a different feud with someone else. But, I mean, just the way it ended, you know, like he got the title, he's celebrating about the belt. And, you know, he's talking about Extreme Rules and he's going to go into Sunday and, you know, that match is not necessarily going to make him, you know, like the future or, you know, like the main guy right now. But he goes from feeling like he belongs to where he should be a star. And the way it ended, it felt like, okay, this is going to give him momentum into the whole network special. Felt like it was designed to get you to root for Ricochet that much more for Extreme Rules. And the idea that he retains, you know, against AJ Styles, because look, I told everybody a couple of weeks ago that SmackDown was still going to do the split screen with the commercials and have wrestling during commercial breaks. The advertisers on SmackDown are different than Raw. Hopefully everybody understood that little advertising lesson that I gave everybody 3 weeks ago. But I also feel that this experiment that Vince has right now is going to end and end quickly. It needs to end because the idea of having 2 out of 3 falls matches and 2 of the falls combined last 2 minutes. And because they can only have X number of minutes before they go to a commercial break, they need Ricochet and AJ Styles to have another 10-15 minute match on Raw, but not this bullshit. Oh, the match ends and it restarts because it's a clubber at ringside and this and that. No, in storyline purposes, they get involved, they get disqualified. You don't restart a match. It's retarded. Doesn't make sense. Right. You know, to have it be one fall and then they decide they're gonna make it 2 out of 3 falls. It just really cheapens the value. Go to a fucking commercial break. Have the match as far as on paper, because I've been reading the times of these matches for the last couple of weeks, and people see. I mean, my God, you have 3-4 matches that don't even last 90 seconds. How is that a positive? Oh, but we didn't miss anything during the commercial break. The fuck does that mean? That's going to make you want to watch Raw more next week because you would rather have a 90-second match or bullshit restarts then fucking go to a commercial break. Maybe you got to take a leak. Maybe you want to get a sandwich or a Hot Pocket. Or maybe you want to fucking just go check your messages or check your emails. Or maybe you want to go get something to drink during a commercial break. I mean, you know, it's just this trade-off is not going to last. They need to take this further. I hope that they exchange some title victories. I just don't know if we will get a Ricochet AJ Styles extended feud. I don't know if we'll get a Cesaro Aleister Black, Nakamura Finn Balor. That's an awful lot to extend 3 feuds right there. But those aren't bad feuds to have for the summer.
No, they're not bad at all, actually. And I think the Ricochet and AJ match up well with each other. I mean, you're talking about the future and really the past. I mean, he's the present to a degree, but AJ's, you know, glory days are behind them. He's just kind of Chris Jericho in it right now. He's a little younger than Jericho, but he's an elder statesman. You know, he's not going to, I don't see AJ getting world titles. I think this is going to be his marker for whatever the remaining time he's here. I mean, he might get another title run, but I don't know. Maybe they're just going to do this club thing and make it like a real legit faction. And if they get Balor in there, it could become very interesting. But Ricochet would need some help because they're going to just beat him down every week. He's on his own.
Yeah.
And he's not a tough guy. So, you know what I mean? It's like he's basically, would you say he's kind of like a new version of Rey Mysterio, DT, without the mask?
No. Two totally different personalities.
Think so?
Yeah, two totally different personalities.
Nice guy. You're very everything's aerial, and yeah,
tons of nice guys there. I mean, Kofi was another Rey Mysterio. You know, there's a lot of nice guys with great talent over there. He just, you know, there's something about him that you could just see. You know, he's got a bright future.
He's okay. Not one of my favorites, but I think he's meant for the young fans. I don't think he's meant for us. You know, I mean, you can like. I'm just to me, I don't see him as someone that. You know, he's for the younger generation, which is fine. You need that. You know?
I'm one of the few that enjoys Shane McMahon on TV. Just don't want these 5-minute promos. You know, put two pounds of bologna in a 1-pound bag sometimes. You know, we don't need 4, 5, 6-minute promos. But
of course not.
I enjoy my Shane McMahon on TV. I have no problem with it. Nice little balance. You know, enjoy it while it lasts. Just like Undertaker, they said it tonight. You know, we said that about Jericho and others in the last year or two. Enjoy it now. 5 years from now, you're probably not going to get it anymore, including The Undertaker. Enjoy it while it lasts. But at the same time, getting back to Undertaker, they have to be very, very careful about the legs. If I see it, and a lot of people out there see it, WWE sees it. And, you know, as much as maybe Undertaker is in denial, you don't want to see somebody get seriously injured because their head is a little lower, you know, below Undertaker's knees, and you got a repeat of Austin Owen Hart.
Yep.
Next, we had Owen Ziggler in the Raw match because it ended at 17 seconds.
Thank God.
Yeah. Why
does Ziggler stay here? Why?
Well, you know, he got... You know, a lot of time the last couple of months. I mean, they brought him in for Saudi Arabia and a little bit more. And, you know, you knew that he wasn't going to overtake Kofi. So it's like, all right, what do you do next with Ziggler? So, you know, this was like the little transition. I mean, it's, you know, I don't think it was that big of a deal. But, you know, Owen's cutting the promo on Shane McMahon. You know, I think this leads to Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens, possibly for SummerSlam. Who knows?
Yeah, I would think so. That'll be a good one, I think. Shane and Owens at SummerSlam. I think the crowd would be into that.
Yeah. By the way, everyone who PM'd me, emailed me, you know, tweeted me about it. Yes, I did take notice of Charlie Caruso's outfit tonight.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Patreon predictions contest. I will be able to determine the winner tonight because I obviously could not stay on the page anymore because we had to prepare for the show. But as soon as we're done over here, before I conk out for the night, I'm going to go over everybody's entries. And it's cool because I highlighted everybody's entries that were wrong. So all I got to do is just browse the list quickly, and whoever has the least number of highlighted entries, you know, is the winner. I didn't want to give out an early winner, but I know Murray Coombs Jr. was in the lead right up to Brock Lesnar cashing in. So I don't know with Brock Lesnar cashing in how that does with the contest, but you know, I'll definitely figure out the winner tonight. I'll officially announce it tomorrow on DTKC. I'll post it on DonTony.com as well.
Cool.
Next, we had Kofi versus Samoa Joe for the WWE Championship. 9 minutes, you know, Joe dominating a majority in a match. Kofi hitting his finisher out of nowhere. You know, it felt like, you know, I call his finisher the 958, the 959, because on SmackDown, for those that don't listen to the shows on a weekly basis, he did it with Sami Zayn, he did it with Kevin Owens, he's done it with others. You know, there's no overrun anymore. So it's 959, and Kofi's eaten like 4 or 5 significant moves, and then he fucking hits his trouble in Paradise, which I call the 959, because he hits the move, boom, 1, 2, 3. I mean, it's just, I need suspension of disbelief. Man. I complained when Sami Zayn hit those 3 blue thunder bombs and hit like some other move, and Kofi kicks out of all of them, and then Kofi hits one move at 959 and it's over. You know it has to end at 959 because they're going off the air. But even with Kevin Owens hit moonsaults, hit fucking this, dives, or everything you could think of, And then Kofi hits the 959 and gets 1-2-3. And it felt like that tonight. I mean, I don't think anybody, with the exception of maybe one person, thought that Samoa Joe had a chance of winning. But, you know, this is Extreme Rules. This was the opportunity, in my opinion, to have them have a little bit of a brawl. I mean, look, it seemed like everybody who had the rules a little bit laxed, there were points where the crowd really got into it. This could have been a match where Kofi, you could have did false count anywhere, something. And they didn't have a lot of time, but still, they could have done stuff outside the ring. Kofi could have done a dive somewhere, and people would have been like, you know what? He fucking showed it in this match. Instead, we fucking get Samoa Joe dominating it. Kingston hits the 959. Match is over.
Yeah.
So what'd you think of the match? Am I being a little too hard?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, Samoa Joe just, he never wins the big one ever. And then when he wins the title, he has to be handed it. You know, I think he's another guy who's over 40 who's there to just, he doesn't have it good like AJ Styles. He's more of a guy to just basically put people over, where AJ is a featured act. I just think, you know, Samoa Joe's, 2010, if he had come here back when that TNA contract came, it would have been such a different life for Samoa Joe and this company. I just think he came here too little too late, and he gets what he gets at this point. But it's like old Bray Wyatt. It's like we usually talks a big game, and then when it's all said and done, he loses. He loses every time. I mean, if you want to lose your money, if you bet on wrestling, bet that Samoa Joe is going to lose, unless it's against Rey Mysterio. And that's, you can't take him seriously as a title holder in that case. I thought maybe, just maybe, he'll beat Kofi tonight for the belt. Maybe just do something, off, you know, just go a sharp right turn. But no, and Kofi continues to get these victories over all these guys. And I still, has not convinced me, a 41-year fan, that Kofi Kingston is the man. I don't look at him as that. I still look at him on a Tito Santana level. I just think this guy still has the fucking belt. And he beat another guy clean pin. I don't know. I'm just so dissatisfied with Kofi's champion and with Samoa Joe standing in this company as a job guy.
See, I blame that completely on WWE for the simple reason that, you know, again, I always go back to Taker and Jeff Hardy, and I don't care if it's beating a dead horse, but, you know, that is the reason why WWE is a billion-dollar company. That's the reason why TNA, Impact Wrestling, AEW, fucking Ring of Honor, that's why they get paid the money. Because when you have all shapes and sizes in your company, the challenge is for the company itself to make it believable. I mean, in 1995, when fucking Mikey Whipwreck won the ECW heavyweight title, nobody fucking liked it. But what did they do? They did a ladder match with Sandman, and he fucking won. And, you know, it nobody liked it all that much, but it was believable because of the type of match that was involved. And then they had him fucking beat Steve Austin, and the only reason why he beat Steve Austin is because he fucking pulled the tights and Steve Austin's ass popped out, and Steve Austin lost. And then he cut the infamous promo that, you know, that he's got to reevaluate, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and then he would, you know, shave his head, go have one more match, go to WWE, and the rest is history. But the thing is that this is the challenge. When you have someone as small as Kofi and you decide you want to put the heavyweight title on him because he is popular as fuck, he got momentum. A lot of people wanted to see him win it for historical purposes and more. So now it's WWE's challenge, being a billion-dollar entertainment company. All right, motherfucker. You know, you want to have this person be the superhero? Well, you know, if you're going to have a small fucking superhero in the movie theaters, or this little fucking dink rinky dink in a horror film overtake the fucking, you know, killer, you know, this is the challenge. How are you going to do it? When fucking Kane in See No Evil, when people are fucking with him and getting revenge on him, you know, they came up with the scenario that tried to be believable. And that's what you got to do. So you have Kofi this smaller guy, and you give him the belt. It's historic, obviously. Shouldn't have been historic. There should have been more black heavyweight champions by now, but it's still historic. And Kofi busted his ass. I don't like the you get a heavyweight title because you deserve it, but if there was any person to make an exception for it, that Kofi would be ideal. I was happy. I enjoyed it. But then once he won the belt, remember, and we brought this up before, I was doing hotlines at that time. When Rey Mysterio won the heavyweight title, it was a really cool feel-good moment because of the dedication for Eddie and everything else. Within 2 weeks, the luster came off and like, I can't get into Rey Mysterio being a fucking WWE heavyweight champion. Like it just, and that was because WWE didn't know what to do with him to try to really make it believable after. I thought the best, that's why I always go to that one match, the best little man versus big man that they ever did that was really believable from beginning to end was Jeff Hardy Undertaker. And Jeff Hardy at that time, you look at Kofi, I mean, it's not too often the size. So WWE puts the belt on this guy for the WrestleMania moment for historical purposes. And then what the fuck happened? I mean, it just feels like creatively, you know, Kofi is trying to, you know, keep this as chicken side. I wouldn't call it chicken shit. But the thing is that it just feels like, you know, right, where's the creativity in WWE? I mean, the most creative thing they did was him jumping over Dolph Ziggler out of a cage. That's going to be a fucking a legendary title run. You look back at Kofi's entire title run from then until now. The only reason why it's acceptable is because of the pathetic job they did with the Iconics, the pathetic job they did with fucking Hawkins and Ryder, the pathetic job they did with some of the other belts. And, you know, then you have Sasha Banks fucking, you know, crying foul and goes home. I mean, I don't know, man. I just, WWE, really, this was the challenge to show, all right, we're going to make it believable that this smaller guy could overtake the odds. And instead, you give us this today, the 959.
Yeah, I just, it wasn't one of my favorites.
I didn't like the outcome. I knew Kofi was winning, but my God, you could have done so much more with that match today to really shut people up as far as, you know what? You know, Kofi versus Samoa Joe, Kofi fucking killed it in that ring. Instead, we get the 959. So next, we got Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch versus Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans. If Rollins and Lynch, if either Rollins or Lynch loses, they both lose their belts. And the stipulation is that Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans get no more shots after this night. And basically, the match went kind of slow. It had a couple of moments. There was a spot where both Seth and Becky put Lacey and Corbin through tables, but then towards the end, Baron Corbin hits the End of Days on Becky.
That was great.
Yeah, it was great.
It was great.
I mean, she's selling it like she's fucking crippled, but yeah, she's
still out there on the floor.
Yeah, she's still out there on the floor. Seth Rollins loses his shit, fucking wails Corbin with kendo stick, with chairs, hits his finisher, I think, what, three times? The curb stomp? He hit it three times or two?
Yeah, three times. Three.
Yeah, he hit it three times, got the win, and we think, okay, going off the air. And the next thing you know, Brock Lesnar's music hits. Now, earlier in the night, Paul Heyman came out, cut a very quick promo saying that Lesnar might cash in tonight, or maybe he's just Paul Heyman being Paul Heyman, aka a liar.
Well, he guaranteed it.
Well, he guaranteed that either he's being Paul Heyman or Lesnar would cash in, because he guaranteed Lesnar cashing in before and we didn't get anything.
True. Yeah, I was kind of holding my breath and I'm like, okay, he just gave him, you know, two back suplexes, you know, then Heyman gave the thing. He goes, ah, he's going to pull it away from him. Then the referee went and I'm like, wait, he's actually, all right, Heyman's not chasing after him. And then when I saw him hand it off to the guy, he goes, he's cashing in. I'm like, oh, shit, this is real. Like, I watched, last minute, Brock Lesnar's going to dive out, grab the suitcase, go, I'm not cashing in yet. But, yeah, I mean, it. DT, not that big a pop when Lesnar pinned Rollins. You surprised?
You want to know something? If you actually go back and watch their entrances, it, you know, Seth Rollins gets a nice pop from the crowd. I don't know. I mean, you know, there was one point where the crowd was chanting, "We want Lesnar," and there was some other fans going, "No, we don't," which I thought was pretty funny. You know, it was just, I was surprised that he cashed in because Rollins was not knocked out. Like, if Rollins would have won and then Corbin hit the End of Days and then Lesnar's music hit, okay. But the fact that Lesnar's music hit and Rollins, I mean, look, let's look at the storyline now. That Rollins fucking flipped his noodle, beat the fuck out of Corbin, and got the win. So wait, because he was all flipped out on what Corbin did to Becky, that's why he lost to Lesnar, that he had his money on his mind on Becky and Becky on his mind. I was thinking of a rap song. I got my mind on my money and my money on my mind. He's got Becky on his mind and his mind on Becky. I mean, it didn't play off the way it should. And that's probably the storyline tomorrow. Because Seth Rollins, he lost it, and he wasn't in the right frame of mind, and that's why he lost the title, and blah, blah, blah. I don't know, man. But Lesnar cashes in. He gets the win. And as I have said in the past, unfortunately, nobody out there in podcast land wants to do the research. But you look at the ratings. When Lesnar is advertised before a Raw airs on TV, Lesnar episodes actually have better ratings than other champions. And let's face facts. Rollins, although the top star of the company, arguably, although extremely fucking talented, definitely top three as far as their talented, most talented performers, but this guy has been on the wrong side of ratings history. And again, I need to remind everybody, I don't blame Rollins for the low ratings, but it seems like Rollins could never pop a rating. And they needed to change this up a little bit. I am perfectly fine with Lesnar being the heavyweight champion.
Me too.
I'm one of those few that it thinks that, you know, it becomes insanity when Rollins is closing out Raw and main eventing Raws and having matches and defending titles, and you look at the hour three and everybody fucking leaves the fucking, I mean, to watch what? Rugrats? I mean, there ain't no fucking shootings going on, no terrorist bombings. There ain't no fucking World Series going down. There ain't no NBA playoffs with the exception of one fucking week. I mean, it's just no excuse. It's just the overall product needs to be mixed up a little bit. And Lesnar, much to the dismay of a lot of people out there, he actually pops a little bit of a rating.
Yeah, he does. I agree with you. For the longest time, I wanted them to take the belt off of Lesnar, and I think it's one of those things, DT, that you see the value after it's not there anymore, or you know, once it's gone, you realize what you had. So I started to realize you're right. There is fact to what you're saying, that there is. It's not a huge increase, but it's an increase, and more people will watch it if Lesnar is going to be on. And some fans just don't want to hear that because they go through that whole, he's a part-timer, he doesn't care about wrestling. Well, you know, me and you have talked about that.
I chuckle because...
Yeah, because, you know, he signed the contract, you know, the WWE agreed to terms with him. But he's not screwing the company, he's doing what the contract requires.
Right, but I chuckle about The Undertaker. Because when The Undertaker came back to help Reigns, and people asked, why is he back? And you and I gave two reasons. To add interest for Extreme Rules, and to make up to wrong the right, which was Saudi Arabia. And people like, oh, you morons, you didn't talk about how because Raw ratings are in the toilet. And I needed to remind those fools that last year we had D-Generation X, Shawn Michaels, and Triple H close out a Raw with an advertised Undertaker and Kane, and that Raw was the lowest rated Raw in the history of Raw at that time, or maybe the second lowest. So you had Undertaker advertised, and it drew the lowest rating or the second lowest rating in history. All right, so don't give me that Undertaker came back to help the Raw rating, because he virtually did guts on Raw the last couple of weeks. It was designed for Extreme Rules, and now I believe because Extreme Rules overall was a success for Undertaker, I think Undertaker will be back again, possibly for SummerSlam. I think so, but I don't know, what'd you think of the overall match with Seth and Becky and Corbin and Evans?
I thought it was all right. The crowd was so out of it, it was hard for me to get into it, because I think, again, you have the two most polarizing, and not in a good way polarizing, not John Cena polarizing or Roman Reigns polarizing.
Well, polarizing is not good, period.
No, it's not good, period, but there's polarizing for the upper echelons wrestlers, and then there's polarizing for some people on the underneath card. The underneath card is already fighting uphill battle. Baron Corbin has a lot of disdain from a lot of fans, and so does Lacey Evans. That's why they match up well. I thought for a brief second that they might win the belts tonight. I thought it would be funny just to see everybody upset about it. But the match overall was okay. Just the crowd wasn't that into it, DT. They just really weren't. No. They popped once Baron had interaction with Becky and was Deep Sixter. Then they got in. Then it was like, whoa. And then when Rollins kept consistently hitting him with the chair and Deep Six is the other move. Then the crowd got into it. But before that, they just were kind of like, eh. When Lacey and Becky were in there, eh. It was very – that takes you out of it at home. It does. So I got the fucking TV cranked up as loud as it can be, you know, without pissing off my my landlord. And but it there was no reason for it to be, because the crowd wasn't responding that way anyway. So I wound up lowering it. And then he put the move on Becky. And then I heard the pop. I'm like, oh, okay, this is going to get good now. Then Lesnar came out. And then it ended good. I think a good ending, as far as I'm concerned, mediocre match at best, and the reaction throughout majority of the match, 80% of it wasn't good. Last 20% was okay.
Yeah, I think the question now is, who does Lesnar face at SummerSlam? I know the easy thinking is Seth Rollins, but we've been there, done it. I don't know how much I want to see that. I mean, obviously. I'll tell you the interesting thing about it is, you know, Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch, the idea was that after this, no more title shots for Corbin and Lacey Evans. Now, after what Corbin did to Becky Lynch, now they could still have interaction with Rollins and Corbin since there's no title on the line. So, we will see. But what was your favorite match of the night, least favorite match of the night? And overall, on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give the pay-per-view?
Favorite match tonight was the tag opening match. Maybe it wasn't that great, but just the crowd was so into it. I was into it. And I like, obviously, Taker's one of my all-time favorites, and I still like Roman Reigns. Not one of my all-time favorites, but Taker is. So it was cool to see the two of them team up. Not going to be wearing the Graveyard Dog shirt anytime soon, though, but I like the two of them teaming up. I would say that was my favorite match just from getting into it and the crowd reacting, and I was kind of reacting at home.
Can I just interrupt you for a sec? We'll leave Owens and Ziggler off of, you know, our
worst match because it really didn't happen
and it wasn't an advertised match, so we won't include that one.
Okay, so I'll say my favorite was Taker, and for the reasons of excitement, the best match on the card I think was Cesaro and Aleister Black. I agree with you on that. Worst match. Probably, honestly, the main event. I might have to go with that if I'm not going with Ziggler. Or I'll go with Samoa Joe and Kofi. The two, isn't that funny? The two champion, the two big deals in the company. That's my one and two worst, most hated matches for me on the card. So there you go. And my favorite match is the long veteran who should have been long retired, and a half-assed Roman Reigns was nowhere near the Roman Reigns that he was before he had leukemia. This is not the same Roman Reigns anymore. And I'm not even saying that to be I'm not saying that to be controversial. I'm not saying that to be a fanboy. He is not Roman Reigns anymore. I don't know what he is still top guy. He still looks like Roman Reigns, but he's not the same anymore since this illness, DT. He just isn't. We can talk about that another time. Overall, rank the pay-per-view as 7.
Okay. All right. My favorite match of the night, it was close. My toss-up was either Lashley and Strowman or Aleister Black and Cesaro. And to be honest with you, I lean towards Aleister Black and Cesaro because it was that's why I chose this match as the tiebreaker on the predictions contest, because there was two ways you could look at this match. You could have had Black just dominate him and beat him in a minute, which I know a lot of people could say, oh, they wouldn't do that to Cesaro. But, you know, after Black being pushed for 2 months, like, you didn't know how they were going to treat this match. You didn't know if they were going to give them time or if it was going to just be a quick squash. And case in point, look at Finn Balor and Nakamura. It got announced over the weekend, and people were like, oh, my God, after what happened on SmackDown, this is going to be a fucking, this is going to be the sleeper tonight. And the match was very, very short. A lot shorter than I think people thought it would be, even though it was part of the pre-show. But I really enjoyed Black and Cesaro. I'll go with that one. My least favorite match of the night was the Usos versus the Revival. They tried. They just could not click. There was one or two moves, even when they hit the Samoan drop onto Scott Dawson, I think it was.
Yeah.
That move kind of like just personified the whole match for me. It just felt like they were off. They had a hard, you know, shoes to fill because they were following the Undertaker match, which, you know, people really enjoyed. So this felt like, okay, the match to bring everybody down. I just couldn't get into it. On a scale of 1 to 10, I give the pay-per-view a 7.5. I would have given it an 8, but the Kofi Samoa Joe match should have been a lot more. That match should have been the one where they could have really used the Extreme Rules. I've said it before twice, but that match, that was the easiest way for them to really amp it up a notch for Kofi, and they did nothing. The main event fell flat for me. I liked the Lesnar win at the end. Again, still surprised because Rollins was not knocked out. But again, tomorrow I can almost bet the ranch that they're going to say that Seth Rollins wasn't in the right frame of mind, and that's why he lost the belt, and blah, 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 blah. Ah, fuck that. Fuck that. You know, have an MCT coffee, you'll be in the right frame of mind. You'll get that fog lifted quickly. So, but with that, we are done. Before we go, I know a few people were pointing out that Nikki Cross may have pooped her pants during the match. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
There is, you know, a couple of screenshots where there's, I guess you could call it almost like a softball-sized wet spot on her behind area.
I don't even want to.
You know, look, she's a human being, man. I mean, pun intended, shit happens.
to CM Punk, well documented.
Yeah, it's happened. It happened to CM Punk more than once, I believe.
Yeah, when he was taking antibiotics.
Yeah, and I think he was also training for a fight. I think he pooped on someone, too.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, it's been a
Andre,
few.
Andre the Giant did it on Bad News Allen.
Yeah. Look, I don't know if she pooped her pants. I don't think I want to know. I did get a kick out of Lacey Evans's tights with Seth on it.
Yeah.
Gave me flashbacks of Ravishing Rick Rude.
I was going to say that. It's ironic. Speaking of Rick Rude, my friend gave me a Legends figure today of Rick Rude, WWE Legends series. I didn't have it, and he got it for me. He picked it up for me while he was at a convention.
What was Jake's wife's name again when he had...
Cheryl Roberts.
That's what it was. When Rude had Cheryl's... that was great. On the tights, that was awesome.
Let's see what Cheryl looks like these days. It's been 30 years.
Yeah. You know, everybody ages, you know.
Sadly.
Yeah. But, well, tomorrow we will pick it up where we leave off over here. Obviously, for everyone, we're not going to get into Extreme Rules again on Monday night because we already spent here about 80 minutes. Mm-hmm. And we'll dedicate that time talking about whatever goes down tomorrow, some other wrestling news, a few other things. And we'll comment a little bit about this weekend. And especially, once again, Cody fucking opening his mouth talking WWE, which, you know, I think is totally unnecessary. Too much name dropping. I mean, just fucking go balls out with your cards. That's the best way to shut people up and to fucking really give it to them. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm watching the rest of it. I saw the Evolve, and of course, Jeff Hardy was arrested this weekend. So there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about. So
11 o'clock right after? Or 11?
Yeah, 11 right after. Seems like that's the way to go. And especially since we finish at 12:30, gives us extra 15 minutes to talk.
And we all need that. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
All right, DT.
Talk
tomorrow.
To you later.
Peace.
Take it easy. All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this pay-per-view recap. I think we were very fair. I don't think that we were unfair in any way, shape, or form. Let us know what you think. You can follow me on Twitter at DonTonyD, the website DonTony.com. Again, for our patrons, as soon as I'm done over here, I am going to figure out who won tonight. The Lesnar cash-in threw everything off. Because I honestly didn't think Lesnar was cashing in. I had already determined who won, who got the consolation prize. I even messaged someone to let them know they got the consolation prize. And I literally messaged him about 30 seconds later and said, oh, scrap that. Lesnar just cashed in the belt. His briefcase. We got to wait. So, hey, I hope you enjoyed the pay-per-view. It wasn't all that bad. I mean, look. I will say this. I know I joked about it on Twitter tonight, but I'll say this. You had G1. You had AEW. You had WWE. You had other indie events. You had a lot of wrestling this weekend. And it's a lot to take in. It's a lot to absorb. And sure, you know, each event had its moments that they were great, and they had their moments where they weren't so great. Tonight's pay-per-view, mixed reviews. Some people absolutely loved it. Some people did not like it at all. Me, I actually enjoyed most of the pay-per-view. If they would have just tweaked two or three little things on that pay-per-view, it would have really knocked it out of the park. I don't get what's going on with Kofi. I don't get it. That should have been the easiest thing for them to do tonight. And honestly, I know they want to focus everything around Seth and Becky, but I think everybody will agree with me on this, especially the Kofi fans out there. The over saturation of Seth and Becky for Extreme Rules hurt Kofi tonight, because you did not need to go all balls out like they did. That stipulation where winner take all, honestly, did anybody for the most part in their right mind think that Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans, on the heels of the lowest fucking ratings in the history of Raw, the fact that the fucking WWE stock is down 30% or 25% in the last 2 months, and it's not because of Khashoggi, it's not because of one individual, but you need to fucking start building a little momentum. And my God, Seth and Becky, after the debacle on the last fucking pay-per-view with Corbin and Rollins, you know, they did not need to put so much focus on that, but they wanted to go over the top of the storyline. They should have fucking done a little bit more for Kofi, in my opinion. But not a bad pay-per-view overall. I enjoyed it. And let us know what you think. So, everyone, take care. By the way, the next WWE pay-per-view is SummerSlam, August 11th. And yes, we will be doing a recap right after the pay-per-view, as usual. So, and then soon, we have AEW. Once they're on a normal basis, we will start doing recaps for their pay-per-views as well. But we'll talk a little bit about it on Monday night. And everyone, take care, be well. I'll talk to you soon. Ciao.